Hello, listeners, and welcome to The Europeans, your weekly smorgasbord of titbits from across the continent. I am Dominic Kramer, a singer living in Amsterdam, but currently in London. And if she's managed to get Skype working, I should be speaking to Katie Lee, my friend and real-life professional reporter living in Paris. Are you there, Katie?
You always give me such hassle for not being able to use Skype. Can I just, for the record, state that I'm really amazing at Skype and a wonderful person in general? Yes, hello, it's me, Katie. I'm in Paris, all on my own. Now, it's really sad, listeners. Dominic came to see me this week. You might have seen the stupid pictures that I put on Instagram. And we had such a nice time. And now he's gone and I'm all on my own and it's sad.
Yeah, it was really nice seeing you in human form.
It was weird. It was like meeting a friend from the internet. I mean, I guess you are a friend from the internet.
Yeah, we are friends from the internet nowadays. We actually hadn't seen each other since we recorded our first episode, which was 21 episodes ago, because this is our 21st episode. Woohoo!
We should have a big bash.
We should.
I'm actually having cake right now, so that's appropriate, it seems. Yeah, but it was a great trip, I think. We talked a lot about what we want to do with the podcast, and we did some guest appearances on other podcasts, which is very exciting. And all of this happened when the weather was really good. And you know when the weather in your town is really, really good and it just kind of feels like it's putting out all the stops for the visitors?
Yeah.
It felt a bit like that. So we had a lovely walk along the river and we ate lunch on a sunny terrace. And I even treated Dominic to the most Parisian experience there is. As discussed on this podcast a couple of weeks ago, we had a drunk trip to McDonald's. It was amazing.
We did do that. And also, she took me to band practice where she performed an alt-rock classic by the Pixies, which was pretty spectacular. You've got hidden talents, Katie. Maybe you're going to be the singer living in Paris now.
Just you wait. We might have some new listeners this week because we've made it into the much coveted new and noteworthy section of iTunes. Should we tell people a little bit about what this whole thing is?
Yeah, you can.
Okay, thank you for putting me on the spot there. This is The Europeans. It's a podcast about Europe where we try not to talk too much about boring stuff that happens in Brussels or tedious Brexit-related dramas. And we focus instead on the amazing people that live here and all the more interesting stuff that's been going on. And a lot of the time we call people up as well. So we've had a Michelin-starred chef on this programme. We have had the voice of Donald Trump on German public television. And we've had the Norwegian guy who's in charge of looking after copies of all our seeds in case there's a nuclear apocalypse. There is really something for everyone.
This week, we've got two really interesting interviews for you. I spoke earlier in the week to Agata Srafanyuk of Client Earth, a European firm of environmental lawyers who have been part of a team fighting the Polish government in the courts for the past 2 years over the issue of illegal logging in one of the final primeval forests of Europe. We also did an interview together, didn't we, Katie, this week?
We did. While Dominic was in Paris, we talked to Parisian podcaster Oliver G and his lovely Swedish fiancée Lina. Oliver runs a podcast about all things Parisian and French in general. And we paid a visit to his tiny little studio up many, many flights of stairs to chat about his quest as a foreigner to figure out France and their forthcoming honeymoon, when they're doing a tour of France in the shape of a heart.
Wow.
It's just me throwing up a bit. Only joking, Oliver and Lina, we're just very jealous because you love each other so much. Anyway, all of that is coming up after Good Week, Bad Week.
Good Week, Bad Week.
It's been a very good week for Belgian people who are locked into gym memberships.
So specific.
Yeah. If you are a Belgian person who's locked into a gym membership, you've had a really good week. Anyway, I think it's a really interesting story. You can decide. But let's start at the beginning. Last year, a Belgian doctor wrote a sick note for one of his patients in order to help her withdraw from her €70 a month gym membership, which she was locked into for another 18 months. Now, some outlets have characterized this as it being a fake sick note, but the doctor has since said that she was also complaining about neck pain and a middle ear infection. That said, the doctor argued that he wrote the note because he believed that she could not afford the monthly bill and therefore he was acting out of social concern. As you can imagine, this didn't go down that well with the fitness industry in Belgium, and the doctor faced accusations of malpractice, hence why there were reports of like this fake sick note. But last week, he was cleared of this charge, as the Order of Physicians said that he had acted appropriately in his social role, which I think is actually quite extraordinary that he's got away with it, and I approve.
What an amazing victory for people that signed up to gym memberships and then regretted it immediately.
Yeah, I mean, it's controversial because, and some are arguing that it's like, shouldn't be the job of a doctor to decide whether or not you can pay for something. And maybe that's fair enough. But I think many would agree that gym memberships that tie people in with no flexibility aren't necessarily in the interests of the consumer. And yeah, I have a soft spot for this doctor's intervention. Society wouldn't benefit if this gym membership had brought the woman into debt, and it's very possible that then her health would have worsened. So yeah, I don't know. I think gym memberships shouldn't be as strict as they are, and it's something that's being discussed across Europe at the moment, in fact, long-term gym contracts. The Office of Fair Trading in the UK moved to improve the situation back in 2016 with quite a degree of success. I think now you aren't meant to give out contracts for longer than 12 months, so that's a big start. And this case in Belgium may well move things forward for better consumer rights when it comes to gym memberships in Belgium. So watch this space.
That's excellent. I just wonder though, what else could Belgian doctors help us out with? Maybe like if you get into a bad mobile phone contract or something like that, that'd be fun.
That's what the gyms were saying. They were like, oh, well, if they can do that, what about like energy bills and gas contracts that you're tied into? Can they also get out of them?
You should get a Belgian doctor to help you out with that gas scam that you got involved in.
Oh my God, I've forgotten about the gas scam. And my husband Thomas reminded me the other day. He was like, you need to call up our current gas providers to see if they're trying to move me. It's scary. It's still hanging over me, Katie.
Sorry for bringing it up.
Anyway, now it's been a bad week for me. Who else has it been a bad week for?
It has been a bad week for authorities in Iceland. Bit of a mad story this week. It's got lots of really good elements though. Iceland, Bitcoin, a heist, a prison break, and a plane with the Prime Minister on it. So are you paying attention?
Yeah, I mean, it sounds made up.
No, it's real. There's this guy called Sindri Thor Stefansson. He's suspected of masterminding the theft of 600 computer servers that were being used to mine Bitcoin. The computers themselves are worth 1.6 million euros. So this guy had been in prison since February. Probably the first mistake of the Icelandic authorities in this story was to put him in a low security prison, which doesn't even have fences. You can use the internet there. It's for really sort of low grade crimes. So this guy, Sindri, kind of strolls out of the prison, it seems, and gets on a plane to Sweden using a fake passport. And get this, Iceland's Prime Minister was on the same plane on her way to Stockholm. The Bitcoin heist was a pretty big deal in Iceland. It's been dubbed the Big Bitcoin Heist, which maybe sounds catchier in Icelandic. And this guy, Sindri, was one of 11 people who've been arrested. Since fleeing, he has written a letter to an Icelandic newspaper saying that he's innocent and there's no evidence against him. And he wasn't supposed to be in prison anyway because his time in custody was up. But it is a funny little story, and it's cast a spotlight on this massive industry that's grown up in Iceland in recent years around Bitcoin. Mostly because it's really, really cold there. So it's a good place to store computer servers. A bit like the seed vault in Norway that keeps all those copies of seeds we just talked about. If you can remember all the way back to March 13th, you might remember our interview with its coordinator, Åsmund Asdal. So yeah, nice little Nordic crime drama for you this week.
It sounds like Åsmund was better at looking after his seeds than they were looking after Bitcoin in Iceland.
Yeah, there is an international arrest warrant out for Sindri, so if you do spot him somewhere around Europe, do give us a ring, but call Interpol first.
Yeah, I was going to say, Katie, why would they give us a ring?
Give us the scoop! We're going to Poland this week, or rather you are, Dominic.
Yeah, Katie was busy at work, so I had a chat on my own with Agata, who wrote the legal complaint to the EU Commission about the Polish government handing out too many logging contracts in one of the largest areas of this huge primeval forest that used to stretch across the European plain. The Białowieża Forest covers 60,000 acres of land in Poland and Belarus and has an incredible level of biodiversity and the largest population of wild bison in Europe, which, incidentally, is the last remaining population of wild cattle on this continent.
They're Europe's heaviest land mammal. Did you know that?
No, I didn't. Interesting. So there's a lot to protect here, more than we have time to talk about. But I wanted to speak to Agata Zafraniuk because I think it's fair to say that she and the rest of the team that worked on this case have been no less than European environmental heroes whilst fighting the Polish government in court. And this case has some pretty amazing implications for deforestation across the continent.
Oh, the dog is trying to get in. That's funny.
Go away, dog. We have to talk about Poland.
We do have to talk about Poland. So it's a really big deal for the tree community in Europe, if that's a thing. And Agata will try and explain why. So the European Court of Justice ruled last Tuesday that the Polish government had violated EU law in allowing logging in the primeval Białowieża forest. Are you optimistic that this is the end of the saga and that the logging will now stop?
I would say it's a kind of a bitter victory, because from one side, of course, it's a huge moment for all of us, for all defenders of Białowieża forest and hundreds of people who were very heavily engaged in saving this unique Asian woodland from unthinkable destruction. But on the other hand, it's also sad because the ruling is against my country, against Poland, and it's caused by the activities of the Minister of Environment, so the body who should actually protect the environment, not destroy it.
Why do you think the Polish government is so stubborn about this issue? Is it mainly influenced by lobbying, or is it an anti-environmental cause célèbre for this right-wing administration?
I would say both. The lobby of the forest, state forest, which in fact manage one quarter of the Polish territory, it's a very powerful body, and they see forests from mainly from the economic perspective. And the Minister of Environment, the previous Minister of Environment, Jan Szyszko, he's very engaged with the state forest and have very close relations. And he also sees the nature from more human's perspective. So he always underlined that the nature should serve people, should serve humanity.
Mm-hmm.
They're still thinking that the logging is the best way to manage the Białowieża forest.
They also use this argument that lots of the trees were infested with bark beetle. Was there any scientific standing for using that as an argument for why they should chop down some trees?
The only scientific studies that they were saying that the logging is good in fighting the bark beetle are the scientists who are very closely related to the state's forest holding. The majority scientists, not only from Poland but also abroad, they were very clear, saying that the logging is not an effective way to deal with the bark beetle. In a forest like this, you should not make such a brutal interference as intense logging.
The current Prime Minister, Morawiecki, is thought to be a more European-facing Prime Minister than his predecessor. With this new cabinet, are you feeling more positive than you were a year ago on environmental issues?
The change is for better, because at least the new Minister of Environment is saying that he will comply with the judgment. And in my personal opinion, they don't have any choice. If not, the European Commission will launch another infringement procedure, and at this stage already there will be hefty fines. And the minimum penalty is 4.3 million euro, but usually in such cases the fines are much higher, potentially reaching tens of millions of euros.
Wow. The forest, of course, isn't only in Poland. There's a big section of it in Belarus. I've been looking into it, and not as much is written about the Belarusian section. Presumably, it's looked after better, and I guess this is a relief. Because if there was to be similar logging in Belarus, you wouldn't have as easy a legal route to challenge it, because they're not members of the EU. Is that a good assumption?
It's right. Fortunately, in Belarus, the whole Belarus part of the Białowieża forest is protected as a national park. And therefore, there are no such intense logging allowed in this forest. In Poland, only one-fifth of the Polish part is protected as a national park. And it's not so easy to log there. Therefore, we think now is the moment for thinking of a long-term solution. So enlarging the national park, so it encompasses the whole Białowieża forest.
It's taken 2 years for this to work through the courts, and in the meantime, tens of thousands of trees have been felled. There has to be something to make politicians want to move faster to protect the environment, because in the past 2 years, presumably quite a lot of irreversible damage has been done.
2 years is a lot, but if you will look at the case closely, you will see that every stage was really fast-tracked. The Commission was always giving less time for Polish authorities to reply, because usually they are giving, for example, 2 months to reply to some letters. In this case, they gave always 1 month. The procedures were also very fast-tracked in the Court of Justice. This ruling is setting a higher standard for forestry. So not only in Poland, but also in all other European member states. There are also a lot of logging happening in Romania, in Bulgaria, in Latvia, which are also very harmful for the environment. So this ruling will have a wider impact and hopefully will help to save other precious forests in Europe.
Can I just say, this forest looks amazing, like really amazing. If you look at pictures of it on Google, just very mossy and ancient with all these fantastic, massive bison roaming around. Did you know, Dominic, it's got a 4.6 star rating on Google?
That's so cool.
Did you know that forests could have Google ratings?
I didn't know that.
Yeah, but 4.6, I mean, like, who are these harsh people who are giving forests like bad ratings? I did actually have a quick scroll down. And I found one from a Finnish tour guide who was really snobby about it, saying that Finland's got loads of its own nature, so why would you even bother going to this Polish forest? 3 stars. Can you believe that?
Oh, snap. That's so rude. Well, it's higher than my Uber rating, so yeah, kudos to you, Bjarveta.
Moving on to somebody else who gets lots of good reviews. See what I did there? We have been hanging out with a fellow podcaster in Paris. Oliver G is an Australian journalist. He is the host of the Earful Tower podcast, which is a pun that Dominic in particular is very fond of. And his show is about figuring out Paris and figuring out France. He has done episodes on the best secret bars in Paris and whether hipsters are ruining the city, language tips for French learners. So if you're a Francophile, do check it out. And we did a little podcasting swap this week. Dominic and I paid Oliver a visit in his charming little studio. And for his show, which is going to be coming out soon, not sure when exactly, we talked about France's role in Europe. And we also interviewed Oliver and his lovely Swedish fiancée, Lena, about the podcast, because Lena is getting involved with it. They're going to be using the show to document their honeymoon later this year, which is, as mentioned, going to be a tour of France in the shape of a heart, which is almost unacceptably cheesy, but they're both very charming and lovely people. So we've decided to forgive them for it.
We've been wanting to go around France discover France, the country we live in, for 3 years, basically, as long as we've been living here. And I think it just takes some time to really get to know the city you live in to start with. So we wanted to get to know Paris before we just ventured out every weekend for small weekend trips. So
and then we're like, forget the weekend trip. Let's do a 6-week trip.
Exactly.
Basically.
Yeah.
Wow. So 6 weeks. How are you traveling?
By scooter. We're traveling by a tiny little red scooter. Wow. 2 people.
6 weeks on the scooter. 2 of you, rain or shine, with your luggage and everything. Are you hoping to still be married by the time you finish?
Here's the thing. We've done a trip before. We've test road tripped, right? We did a 6-week trip across America in a car, though, not a scooter. Okay, otherwise, that would have taken forever. But we did a New York to LA with like a budget of basically zero, staying in the motels with bullet holes in the wall kind of
literally.
Thing.
Literally. It was crazy.
Yeah, it was pretty bad. But we realized that we can do it together and it worked really well. And the kind of the highlight of that trip for us, as lovely as the Grand Canyon and the Times Square and all that stuff are, the highlights were the really small, off the beaten track, villagey kind of places where people were really friendly and open. And that's kind of what we want to discover in France. And it's about, I think it was about 3,000 kilometers or something like that. We worked it out roughly.
Let's not think too much. Let's not dwell on that number too much because it's kind of off-putting.
It's daunting, isn't it?
But yeah, it's somewhere.
About 3 hours a day should get us there in 6 weeks back to Paris.
How did you end up here? What's the story of you guys? Because you're Swedish, aren't you, Lena?
I'm Swedish, yes. Well, I've been moving around quite a lot. And when I was 18, I moved to London. Then I moved to Milan and Abu Dhabi and then back to London again. And then back to Stockholm, where I grew up, for about a year. And that's where I met Oliver.
Guilty, yes.
And you can take it from there.
Yeah, why were you in Stockholm?
I was working as a journalist in Stockholm. I'd been there for 4 or 5 years. And then I quit the job and got a job in Paris.
You guys have been in Paris for 3 years. I think you said on your episode about this that you feel like after 3 years, you don't really feel like you know France. You know Paris pretty well, but not France. Mm. What do you both think the difference is between those two things?
I know that the French people get really wound up
it's kind of a hot topic.
If you compare the two, but there is this huge difference between the two that gets people really riled up. And I want to understand why, you know, especially the whole point of bringing it back to the podcast I've got is the tagline is figuring out France. And, you know, I tend to do a lot of Paris stuff. And I thought this is a perfect opportunity to go out and actually learn this country and see if it's, I haven't really got my own opinions yet. I want to see firsthand what it's like and just, you know, share it with people.
It does seem to be a regular route for young Australians to like head to Europe.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess that's just because the Australians I know all came to Europe, but it does seem like they all my Australian friends say, yeah, all their friends wanted to.
Absolutely. Yeah, but I think it's a big thing about the fact that Australia is so isolated that when you travel, you want to travel properly. You know, you guys, you Europeans, you can say, oh, I want to spend a weekend in the Alps, or I want to, you know, ooh, I want to see what's in Estonia or something like that. Whereas in Australia, you can never do that for a weekend or a week, especially when you're young. That flight is so expensive and time consuming when you're at university or whatever that you have to, you know, it almost makes more sense to make a year of it. So a lot of people do that. They come over to Europe, they base themselves somewhere like London or Paris, where they can get by with a job in a bar, and then they travel for like a whole year. And I did the same thing, but the year just turned into basically 10. And now I'm, you know, marrying a Swede. I don't know.
Stuck here forever. Yeah.
I don't know if I'd use the word stuck. We'll see.
Oliver, I'm curious, you've lived in a couple of European countries now. Is there stuff that you've noticed between the two countries that you've lived in, Sweden and France, that you think, huh, that's like a really European thing? Like, or do you find them completely different experiences?
Rather than the similarities, what stick out for me are the differences. I was first in Sweden, which is such a forerunner in so many things that you don't even realize when you're living there. I lived there for 5 years, so you just end up taking it for granted. Like an example is, it's very cashless, extremely cashless, so much so that homeless people selling those magazines will take credit card payments, you know? So a homeless person will come up with a card machine. And then you come to Paris, France, which is just totally opposite. I was in a bar the other day and I wanted to pay with a card and it came to like 12 euros or something. And she points to a sign that says, I'm sorry, we only take card payments above 17 euros. I was like, what does that even mean? Where did? And she goes, don't blame us, blame the banks. I was like, what? You need to have 17.
No, they just make that up.
I don't know, really, yeah. Surely. But that's like 4 or 5 drinks in this cheap bar that I was in. So I'm never going to buy 4 or 5 drinks in this round. But you know what I mean? Like, so those kind of differences, it doesn't really answer your question in terms of similarities, but those differences really stood out, especially going between two countries like Sweden and France, which goes to show this in just a, you know, 2 hours worth of flying, you can get this wild difference between those two countries, which even gets even more wilder if you head southeast, for example. And that's what I find so interesting about this country. And going back to what I said about being an Australian who comes over here and tries to see everything, just seeing that there's so much possibility. You take a train 1 hour in any direction, you got like a different language, different culture. It's just incredible. Whereas in Australia, you could take a train for 20 hours and it would be like the exact same as where you started, you know?
Still a lot of sort of hot deserts passing by.
And kangaroos, yeah.
I was going to say kangaroos, but I didn't want to stereotype.
No, I'll do it. It's all right.
But then, I mean, you could say the same about France and your experiences in your journey, as you were just saying, that like Paris is a... it's like a different country.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you'll discover loads of different cultures as you travel through the country and exactly. See there's as much variety within France as there is between some of the other countries. Like there, I reckon probably Paris has more in common with Amsterdam than Paris has in common with some parts of the...
It's like variety in such proximity to each other. That's what makes it so interesting, at least for me.
Could you give our listeners the D-Lo of what your podcast is and where to find it?
The D-Lo? I've never heard that one before. As in the download.
Very cool.
Yeah. Wow.
It's a 90s thing.
This Did one... you just make that up?
No, we used to say that in London.
Give us the D-Lo.
What's the D-Lo?
So you want the D-Lo on the E-Tow, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, the D-Lo on my podcast is it's all about figuring out France. Every week, a guest who knows best, someone who's doing something interesting in Paris. So it could be... anything from, like, you know, I had the Australian ambassador to France on, like, one end of the spectrum, to, like, a tour guide or, you know, a comedian or a cook or something like that. Just anyone doing something interesting. The real guest is Paris. We talk about Paris, but then I ask them about what they're doing and try and figure out France through that.
That's exactly what I meant by D-Lo.
Excellent.
Some weeks it's quite hard finding happy stories. This week it was pretty easy. Katie found a truly heartwarming story that she sent me and that came from the German island of Rütgen, where a 13-year-old and an amateur archaeologist discovered a trove of jewellery and metal from the 10th century era of the Danish king Bluetooth.
King who?
King Bluetooth.
Love it.
Have you not heard of King Bluetooth? Anyway, it's the guy that the king who... Bluetooth is named after, as in the wireless technology which I battle with on a daily basis. And actually, did you know that the logo Bluetooth is the two runes that spell out his initial HB, because he was Harry Bluetooth? Isn't that fun?
I did not know that. That's amazing. I still think Harry Bluetooth sounds really funny. It sounds like a porn star name or something.
Yeah, that's true. It was, I think, his like nickname. He had a real name, which I didn't write down. Anyway, back to the story. They first found bits of metal using their metal detector and they thought it was just junk, but they started looking through it more and realized it was special and called in some real professional archaeologists who have been excavating the area with the conclusion that, quote, "This trove is the biggest single discovery of Bluetooth coins in the southern Baltic Sea region."
Again, very specific.
Yeah.
But cool. Very cool.
Yeah, it's like, this is the best podcast that's ever been made by a person called Dominic and Katie.
It really is, though. 10th century bling. That is amazing.
Yeah, and some of it's really nice. They've got like a brooch and a necklace and a little like Thor hammer. I'd wear it all.
You're picking out your favourite items already.
Yeah.
What do you think King Bluetooth would think now if he knew that his name was like a synonym for speakers that don't connect properly?
Yeah, I think he'd be annoyed when he tried to use it, because Bluetooth is like the most frustrating technology. I'm sure I'm not the only one who thinks that. It's amazing, obviously, that like music can fly through the air and go to another machine and play it. But I think once you get over that and spend 5 minutes of every day trying to connect.
You always mock me for being bad at Skype, but you and Bluetooth, it's no better. Come on, old man.
Well, that was it. Thank you so much for listening to The Europeans once again. And a special thank you to Joe Bauer for pointing out that I incorrectly stated last week that the question about Europeans that was posed to Zuckerberg in Congress was in fact from Senator Lindsey Graham, not Chuck Schumer. I should know better. Accept my apologies. He also wrote some really nice things about us in his newsletter for his podcast Without a Path. So subscribe to that if you want to find out about other cool things in Europe.
Thanks, Joe. The podcast has had another great week. Got lots of new listeners joining us every week, which is amazing. Can I ask you guys a favour? We have been told that we really need to make good use of the fact that our podcast has been listed in the much-hyped new and noteworthy sections of the Apple Podcasts app. It's going to be sitting there for a little while, but apparently what is really helpful is if we get a lot more ratings and reviews while it's there. That will really help people to find the show. So if you like the show, please do consider dropping us a big 5 gold stars on iTunes. We would be very grateful. We want to have an even higher rating than the Bierwolvesia Forest.
I was about to make exactly the same joke. We've spent too much time together this week. You can find us on Twitter at EuropeansPod. We're also on Instagram, Europeans Podcast, if you want to see some pictures of the time that Katie and I spent together, IRL. And if you don't know what that means, then you're probably not on Instagram. You do you. That's totally fair enough. You can email us at EuropeansPodcast@gmail.com. And thank you once again to our amazing jingle man, Jim Barn. He's a superstar composer and we got him just before he was famous.
We love him very much. We will see all of you next week for more good old-fashioned European fun.
До свидания.
Bye. Our post-credits tongue twister this week comes courtesy of another podcast about Europe, Previously in Europe, who kindly had us on as guests this week. Thanks very much, guys, for having us. Here is Kieran with our first ever Irish language tongue twister.
Vibanagjo, vibanjoegjo, bargajo, jo. Eran manjo na banjo eran manjo gjo.
That means Joe had a wife and Joe had a banjo and Joe's wife had a banjo. Joe was always better on the banjo than Joe's wife ever was. I mean, that just seems kind of sexist. Why are we going to take Joe's word for it?
Yeah, but I mean, Joe is good on the banjo.
He is good. He is good.